The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Texas Show. It's the show that helps you make sense of things that would otherwise baffle you. Like, for example, why does that one shoe hide in the back of the closet like that?
Is it afraid of you, or does it just need some alone time?
Or maybe it's ashamed of something. Something terrible that only a shoe would be ashamed of.
The answers to these and other questions right here, right now on the Eric Metaxas Show.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm Eric Metaxas, and this is the show. This is it. We apologize. Chris... this is it. This is the show, right?
It's here. Yeah. That's all we got. I'm sorry.
This is all we have, but you know what?
Good night, everyone.
We're just going to have to go through with it. It's too late to do anything now. In a couple of seconds, folks, guess who is my guest? You'll never guess this. I'll give you a hint. His initials are Newt Gingrich. Can you guess? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most people have already guessed. In a couple of seconds, all the way from Rome, the Eternal City, Newt Gingrich is joining us on this program. I don't know why he would stoop to this level. Nobody can figure it out. It's a conundrum, a Chinese puzzle, as it were. And yet, Newt Gingrich, currently married to Callista. Now, that's why he's in Rome. Callista is the ambassador to the Holy See. That's spelled S-E-E. She, of course, is Catholic. You have to be Catholic to be the ambassador to the Vatican. That's the qualification you have to have. So she is over there, and Newt has decided to join her. He's been there for a while. We can ask him what life is like in Rome, but he'll be with us in a couple of seconds. In hour two, it's going to get crazy up in here because we are going to was that too black, Chris Himes? You're my arbiter. Was that cultural appropriation? I can't say crazy up in here.
No, I mean, I think
I call you girlfriend.
You can call me girlfriend. You're one of the whitest people I know, so I think it would take a lot for you to get too black, quote unquote, you know. So
really? Oh, good. Good. Okay. Yeah. So we have Newt Gingrich in a couple seconds. In hour two, it's going to get crazy up in here, girlfriend, and it's going to be well, first of all, we're going to have Brigitte Gabriel. Now, if you know Brigitte Gabriel, she's the kind of person you feel like, why did she drink so much coffee? No one has more energy than she does. It's frightening in a way, unless you know that she's a force for good. She's an amazing person. But she is going to be on this program in hour two. Before Brigitte Gabriel, we have another dramatic reading of Uncle Muggsy, Yankee Doodle Muggsy. That's Tim Raglan and I did two books, Yankee Doodle. Uncle Muggsy and the Terrible Tunes of Christmas. And the second one is Yankee Doodle Muggsy. It celebrates July 4th. It's so patriotic, not joking, that when I read it aloud, which I have done, I get tears in my eyes because it's that patriotic. No kidding. So that's in hour two today.
By the way, I listened to it yesterday. It was wonderful. Chris Himes did all kinds of fun sound effects and
Chris,
music.
Chris, I should say this. It's not just a dramatic reading. Chris has festooned the audio track with so many bells and whistles, sometimes literally, that you'll think that you're in a Dolby sensor round theater listening to Earthquake 1975. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to add all those fun effects. I'm just sad that I'm not like that guy from the Police Academy movies who can do it all with his mouth. I had to.
Yeah, you know what? I'm really glad you're not.
Yeah.
Okay, so in a couple of seconds, we have Newt Gingrich. We should say also yesterday, if you missed it, go back. David Barton. We had a special July 4th conversation with David Barton. He is an historian. And we talked about the statues that are being torn down and what he thinks of it. And he told us some things yesterday, told me some things that I was completely unaware of. And I thought it's interesting that this isn't making the news. I think maybe the most significant was that he said that the statue of the, what is it, the 54th Boston Regiment, it was all black soldiers in the Civil War. They made the movie Glory based on it. That statue was also desecrated in Boston. So you kind of think, so how ignorant are these rioters? They're that ignorant.
It's David
rise to that level of dumb. Like credit dumb.
David is he's such a gentleman, but he was so close to using the word morons, you know.
Well, because you cannot believe that these people could possibly be that dumb. In other words, here we are ostensibly as if they really cared about black lives, but the point is they're pretending to care about black lives, or at least this is what many of them have deluded themselves into thinking is their cause. And then the reality is they're desecrating statues which are celebrating the greatest accomplishments of blacks in America. I mean, literally in this case, at the very time that we were fighting to abolish slavery in America, a black regiment from Boston. I mean, again, it's in the movie Glory, starring Denzel Washington, Matthew Broderick. When David Barton said that to me on the program yesterday, I thought, are you kidding? Like, really? It's one thing to be as dumb as tearing down statues of Grant and Lincoln, but you're really telling me this? And he said, yes. So anyway, if you missed it yesterday, that's also going to air on TBN this weekend.
That's right.
So most people listening to this program know that if you go to TBN every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern time, and if you go to TBN every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern time, you will see this program on TBN. And David Barton will be my guest. So if you missed it and you want to see it this Friday and Sunday is your opportunity. We will post it, of course, on our YouTube as soon as possible, probably on Saturday. All right. Well, we should mention also that we have on Monday, I'm going to be talking to Chauncey Crandall. He is a doctor in Miami Beach, a cardiologist, who wrote a book about praying for someone who had died, and the man was raised from the dead. He had a story to go with it, what he experienced while he was dead. And it was not good. And then he'll talk to us about some other things, but that's Miracle Monday. It's a miracle story, if ever we've had a miracle story. And also, some of you will remember that I interviewed Maura Moynihan, my friend from so many years ago, the daughter of the late Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the senator from New York. She is an activist working, to help tell the world about the horrors of the current Chinese Communist Party. And she directed us to someone named Ethan Gutman, who has reported on something so horrific. If it doesn't make your blood boil, we'll air it next week. But if it doesn't make your blood boil, you're not listening carefully. And if anyone ever buys a Nike product after you hear my conversation with Ethan Gutman, let me simply say, I don't know what you are thinking or what is in your soul that you would help a company that is using, as he will tell us next week, slave labor, Muslim slave labor, Uyghur Muslim slave labor in their factories, Nike. I've heard things like this, but when you get the details from somebody who actually knows, an investigative journalist, it's so horrific. There needs to be an outcry in America. There needs to be an outcry in America. If we don't scream over this, then when you are a slave being used by someone, no one will scream for you, folks. We have an opportunity. We have voices. We need to talk about this.
Yeah.
As I said, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to Newt Gingrich from Rome. I hope we get the connection, but we're gonna talk to him from Rome. Albin, is there anything we forgot? I keep forgetting to mention that my new book in the Donald the Caveman series is called Donald and the Fake News. That is going to be released next month.
Yes.
And I just want to say, I think it's the best one that Tim Raglan and I have ever done. I think it's the true sequel to my Bonhoeffer biography.
Wow. Yeah, and if you buy all three together, you get a pack of Winstons. So
yes,
take advantage.
And by the way, Winston tastes good, really, well, in the way that a cigarette ought to. Did I get that right? Okay, when we come back, we're going to Rome, and you're coming with us. Don't go away.
Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me make a stand. You just got to see.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. As promised, all right, you know, promises made, promises kept. I said that I would get a former Speaker of the House. I didn't specify. I said his initials were Newt Gingrich. That was the promise. Promises made, promises kept. Speaker Gingrich, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. And there's a lot of things going on.
Oh, my goodness. A lot of things going on. Of course, it's early here in New York City where I'm coming from. You are in the Eternal City in Rome. I'm always curious about the most mundane things, like what time is it in Rome right now?
It is 4:09 in the afternoon.
Okay.
We are 6 hours ahead of you.
That's okay. That would have been my guess. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, it's a privilege to have you on. You have a brand new book out called Trump and the American Future. You know, and I know, and my audience knows that we're facing utterly unprecedented things in America today. What is your sense of what is happening right now and what this president will need to do to be reelected?
Well, part of the reason I wrote Trump and the American Future is that I think this is the most consequential election since Abraham Lincoln in 1860. I think the difference between Biden, Pelosi, and Schumer as a team and Trump and McCarthy and McConnell is so wide that people can't imagine how different we'd be 2 years after you had Biden as president with Pelosi and Schumer basically dominating him. But that they would take us to somewhere between California and Seattle. So I think I think what's happening is Trump challenged the entire national establishment, starting with his nomination when they first hated him. The first article about impeaching him is April of 2016, before he's even the nominee, followed up then by a whole series of other kinds of problems. And an unending, relentless attack by what I would call the propaganda media, because they're not news media. I mean, if you look at the New York Times recently, where they printed one column by a conservative senator, and the radicals on the staff rebelled and forced them to fire the editor, it just tells you the totally one-sided propagandistic institutions. And, of course, they spent the last 4 years trying to destroy Trump every single day. So it's very interesting, very, very different than you might think. And I think that this election is going to decide whether we continue to go down that road or whether we end up, deciding that we really do want to become a radically different country.
Well, look, when you say radically different country, I mean, you know, and I know, and many folks listening and watching know that the election 4 years ago was similar in the sense that if we'd elected Hillary Clinton, God forbid, we would have had another couple of Sotomayors on the court. It's the end of America, period, end of sentence. There's not much to say beyond that. The rest is just details. But we have a picture, I guess, because of the rage engendered by Trump, because he is such a fighter, we have a better picture. We've sort of flushed the birds from the bushes, and we can see now much more clearly what the radical left is proposing. Would you say, because we hear it all the time, that Trump is a disruptor? It seems to me that the reason the anger directed toward him is so over the top is because he's the only one in the White House as a Republican who has been willing to take on the giants, so to speak. I mean, China, I mean, many other things, political correctness, but the malfeasance of previous GOP presidents in terms of, or the ignorance, the unwillingness to take on, for example, China, the malfeasance of China, I should say. It seems to me because Trump is willing to take these things on, that the left has been forced in a way to show their true colors. That's really what is happening.
Yeah, I think that's half of what I think that's half of what has happened. I think the other half is that the level of rage they felt when Hillary lost. Remember, these people at 8 o'clock on election night were chilling the champagne and getting ready to celebrate. And 2 hours later, they were the equivalent of PTSD. I mean, there's like an IED had gone off next to them. And all of a sudden, Trump is president. And then every time they started to recover their balance, he would tweet and remind them he really was president. And it just drove them crazy. And when they got in their rooms together, they got more and more openly radical. It's also, and I think this is something that it took me, I've been going back, spending a fair amount of time reading about the 60s up through 72, because I think what we're seeing is the third generation of the anti-American left, and they've gotten bigger, more radical, bolder, more willing to bully people. It's really an astonishing trajectory, and I think people need to understand that in many ways, for all the talk about systemic racism, I think systemic anti-Americanism is a much greater threat to the American system.
And of course, systemic anti-Americanism is the biggest threat to the urban poor, to the Black urban poor in America. In other words, the idea that the folks on the left would continue to oppress those parts of the citizenry, it's a horror. And I think that in a way, because this is coming out in the open, we can have this conversation. I think that folks like Kanye West and Candace Owens, by being so vocal in their support for Trump, I think that's another reason that the left is frightened to death, because they have never even thought of the prospect of losing a significant part of the Black vote.
Sure. As late as February, when I first was writing Trump and the American Future, everything was working. You had the lowest Black unemployment rate in history, the lowest Latino unemployment rate in history. And the result of all that was you were beginning to see really dramatic breakthroughs in the way people were, thinking about things. And Trump's, the share of approval for Trump was going up. And last year, in 2018, for example, in Florida, running against a Black Democrat, DeSantis got 19% of the Black female vote on the issue of school choice. I mean, things were beginning to break down. So among their leadership, who have had to rely, because they can't solve anything, so all they have is demagoguery. You're South Side Chicago. You've been a local leader for 20 or 30 years. Your party's had the mayor's office since 1931, and 18 people get killed in one day. Well, it has to have been Donald Trump's fault. And so because it can't be your fault, because if it's your fault, you're out of a job.
Right.
So you do have this unending desperation. And then the other thing you have is, and people tend to forget this, I mean, the first great wave of anti-Americanism in the 60s and early 70s, they had 2,500 bombs go off. I mean, these people out there in the street now, the people tearing down the statues now, these are the children and grandchildren of genuine revolutionaries who hope to destroy America. And I think that you have to understand how much it is. It's no accident that the three founders of Black Lives Matter are all Marxists and say so openly. So if you think that Lenin and Stalin and Mao are great, role models, then you have people on the left who are very eager to emulate them. And you see them doing it already in getting people fired, getting people ostracized, getting people kicked off of, Facebook, or getting people fired at the New York Times, fired at the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's quite extraordinary how much we have tolerated the rise of the totalitarian left and not stood up and said, this is crazy, this is anti-American, and we're not going to put up with it.
Well, that's what's interesting to me, is that even the fact that you have folks like Pelosi and Schumer allowing AOC, for example, to have such a prominent voice, what do you suppose is behind that?
Well, I think that first of all, the media, which is well to the left of, the average Democrat and well to the left of almost everybody, the media propagates these people and makes them famous. And so they become a force because you live in a world where the media matters. I mean, AOC won a very low turnout primary against a guy who underestimated her. That suddenly became a national story. She then became a national figure. She got to appear in all these feminine, I bet she's had many more magazine covers than Melania Trump.
Hang on
because,
a second.
AOC is of the true fact.
Hey, forgive me. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away, folks.
The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump wants to meet you. This will be the first opportunity he's had to meet with American patriots like you since our country started reopening. His team will cover the flight and hotel and give you VIP access for yourself and a guest. He'll even take a picture with you. All you have to do is text VIP to 88022 today for your chance to meet President Trump. Again, that's VIP to 88022 for your chance to win and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years.
Hi folks, trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea, and so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com.
I'm talking to Newt Gingrich, who is in Rome. I'm in New York City. I don't know where you are, but I'm glad that I'm here talking to the former speaker. I have to ask you, Speaker Gingrich, let's talk about Joe Biden. It is nothing less than fascinating to watch him serve at this point as a kind of puppet. It's so strange. Most people aren't sure what to make of his candidacy on a number of levels. What do you make of it, and what do you make of the president's prospects against Biden?
Well, I think if they can keep Biden in the basement and not allow him to get out very much, he has a shot at winning. I think the minute it goes from being Trump versus Biden to being Trump versus Biden, Pelosi, and Schumer, he starts to lose ground. I'd love to have a reporter walk up to him and say, how do you feel about the fact that 13 of your staff were sending money to Minneapolis to bail out violent looters? Because, the whole Democratic Party now is pro-criminal and anti-police. I'd love to have him come up and say, since he said he would sign Nancy Pelosi's H.R. 6800, the $3 trillion bailout, which she got 207 Democrats to vote for, I'd love to have him go up and say to him, are you really in favor of $1,200 checks to every single illegal immigrant as a stimulus? Because that's what's in the bill. And you just go through a whole series of these things. I think he starts melting at that point, both because I think he's just not very capable, but also because I think these are problems that are really, really challenging. Liberals have to rely on the news media or the propaganda media protecting them from the American people. Because if people really get to understand what these folks are like, they're just, you know, they're gone. They're not going to get elected.
But isn't that
I think there's a desperate effort to protect them.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm saying that there's a desperate effort by the elite media to protect him while they attack Trump. I mean, he wouldn't last 3 days under the kind of a barrage that Trump gets.
Well, few would, I have to say. It's almost funny. But I kind of feel like it's 1972 all over again. I mean, we have the issue of law and order front and center. We have the silent majority. Your average American who is simply trying to make a buck, raise their kids, do the decent thing, who is not ideological in particular, that to me is the person who will maybe not answer a poll or in a poll say undecided, but they know in their heart that there is only one choice because the left has gone so left that it really isn't sensible on any level to vote for them. But it really does feel to me, when you mention law and order and these kinds of things, it feels like 1972.
There's a lot of parallel. I went back, I've been studying the 60s and early 70s to get a feel on the origin of the revolutionary anti-American movement. And it's interesting, by 72, Theodore White, in his Making the President in 1972, is already talking about the fact that the liberal ideology has been transformed into a liberal theology that you're not allowed to dissent from, and that the news media is already becoming a parody and so one-sided and so anti-conservative that it's devouring itself. And a lot of the things we see today, Theodore White's already beginning to sense that he sees the patterns beginning to build, you know, some, you know, 48 years ago. But in fact, the year that Joe Biden went to the Senate. So, you know, Biden is in the Senate for the entire cycle.
How ridiculous that we would think that at his age now, he would suddenly take action against the things that he has watched happen and aided and abetted. China at the top of the list. This president, to my mind, is a hero simply because he has begun to deal with China. And I think he has made many in the GOP, look like rhino hacks. Why haven't we dealt with this before? I mean, you've been a leading voice in the conservative movement for such a long time. Why do you think no one had the courage to take on China before now?
I wrote a book last year called Trump versus China, and I admitted that I was one of them who ended up, frankly, with the wrong approach. I really did believe that with Deng Xiaoping's Southern Tour speeches in 91 and 92, that they were moving towards a more open society. And it was only the last 7 or 8 years it began to be obvious that, no, this is a genuinely totalitarian system. I have a chapter in the new book, Trump and the American Future, which talks about, you know, China. It was very revealing to me yesterday. There was a vote in the House on condemning the Chinese for having lied to the world about the Chinese virus. And in fact, what you ended up with was not a single Democrat voted to condemn the Chinese. And it just gives you a sense of, you know, the Democratic Party is eager to kowtow. The billionaires who made so much money out of China want us to kowtow, because they see it as a money thing. They don't care about human rights in Hong Kong or Taiwan or the Uyghurs in concentration camps. They just know it's a great way for them to make money.
Well, that's the point. I feel like we're making money off of, Nazi Germany, or we're making money working with slave traders. We seem to have lost, at least in our leadership class, any sense of what it means to be an American and to stand up for American liberty. It's horrific. It's one of the reasons, again, that I'm thrilled to have you on, because you've been a clear voice on these issues. We're going to be right back, final segment, with Speaker Newt Gingrich. Don't go away.
Sleep pretty, darling. Do not cry.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to Speaker Newt Gingrich. The book is Trump and the American Future, brand new book, Trump and the American Future. Speaker Gingrich, I have to ask you, really, the forces we're talking about that have been, you know, stirring since the 60s and that in a funny way, it's like trickle down culture. Now they've come to the forefront in a new way with a new vigor. It seems to me that at the heart of it, of course, is Marxism versus Judeo-Christian American Western ethic, that finally we're seeing kind of a battle between them in the same way that in 1860 we saw a battle between slave states and free states. It's a kind of an existential battle, and it is a kind of civil war, almost literally in some senses.
Oh, I think that's right. I think that what you have is just such a dramatic difference. And part of it is that we've had three generations of brainwashing, starting really with people in the early 1960s, like Herbert Marcuse at Berkeley. The brainwashing has gotten more radical. You know, Reagan once said, it isn't what they don't know that's scary, it's what they know that isn't true. And that's a lot of what we're seeing. And these, so you end up with these people. I mean, the very notion that they want to go out and destroy statues of people who they could not have identified, can't tell you anything about their life, have no reason why they're doing it, except that for them it's fun. Well, that's pretty sick, if you ask me.
Well, it's a telling kind of sickness. In other words, they are almost celebrating ignorance, celebrating revenge as a virtue in itself. In other words, it seems to me that there's like a spiritual component where to destroy whatever is, any statue, in a way, they seem to be trying to strike at God himself, at anything that represents what they think of as a Western patriarchal mindset. And look, you know, and I know, we've seen this in the Cultural Revolution in China in the 60s. We've seen this in the French Revolution. This happens over and over in history. But the idea that it's happening on our streets in America, in my city of New York, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, it is extraordinary. And I think that it is, we need to understand, as you just put it, which I think is exactly right, this is not something new. This is not something from Mars. Human beings have a long history of every once in a while totalitarian showing up. And depending on exactly what's going on, either the totalitarians win, as they did, for example, in the French Revolution, or they did when they... if you look at Mao's Cultural Revolution or Lenin and Stalin in 1917 in Moscow, you take a look at all of those and you have to say to yourself, there's a real danger that we too could fall apart. Now, I don't think we will, but I think this is a genuine crisis, frankly.
I'm sorry to agree with you. I think it is. And as I said, I think it's an existential crisis. In a sense, if those Americans who have the dimmest notion of what it is to keep the republic do not stand up and speak and fight, all will be lost. I think that, you know, there are times in our history when we're forced to stand up and fight. And probably the problem, the reason so many of us are complacent is because we've really had such prosperity. We have had so much freedom, so much religious freedom, that we haven't been forced to think much about it. It hasn't been threatened, let's say, until very recently.
Well, that's why when you go back, when you go back, as I did, and you start looking at the 1960s and the level of violence, and you read what they actually said, the people who set off 2,500 bombs in the late 60s, early 70s, they really wanted to destroy the country. I mean, they understood what they were doing. And I think that's why you end up with a kind of, you know, really different kind of problem than we've ever seen before. And I think that we're going to have to decide, you know, are we prepared, in fact, to is America worth keeping? And it's going to take courage. It's not going to happen automatically. And the other side has the huge advantage that they have the propaganda media, starting with the New York Times and the Washington Post and going out through the networks, which every morning tries to set the terms on their side to give them the advantage and tries to protect people like Biden while doing everything they can to cripple and destroy Trump. And it's very formidable.
Well, I was going to say, it seems amazing to me that, you know, since 1996, we've only had one conservative leaning news network. It seems to me that there ought to be three or four by this point. You know, that's what the free market ought to have delivered. I don't know if you have any news or ideas, whether anybody, any billionaires out there are trying to create something like that, because we need more than one network.
No, you're right. And of course, part of the problem is because you've had three generations of brainwashing, many of the people who have a lot of money would rather have, I mean, look at CNN. CNN is run in a way which minimizes its profitability. But it's owned by AT&T, and the president of AT&T who bought it liked the idea of being socially acceptable in places like Hollywood. And so that's what you're up against. It's just remarkable. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to drift onward, but I think this has been a great conversation.
Well, no, that's fine. We're out of time. I think we planned it perfectly. I want to congratulate you on the new book, Trump and the American Future, Solving the Great Problems of Our Time. I know it's already doing well, and that your ideas, Speaker Gingrich, are very important. I've heard you speak in person. You're one of the few folks out there, if I can end on a compliment, you're one of the few folks out there who's able to articulate what the issues are. I hope that you will be stumping for this president in the months ahead. We need your voice. Thanks again for being on this program. Thanks for your service to this country.
Thanks.
And thanks for the book, Trump and the American Future. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
All right.
Someone call us Babylon. Those hungry hunters tracking down the hours.
Make like a Mr. Milquetoast, you'll get shut out. Make like a Mr. Meek, and you'll get cut out.
Hey, Alvin.
Hey, Aaron. What? What?
How about that Newt Gingrich?
How about that? He didn't explain. He didn't explain where his first name came from. But other than that, he was wonderful.
It's probably Newton, isn't it? I think we can look that up online. It's like one of those family names, Newton.
I'm too lazy.
Seriously, though, it's always interesting to talk to him. He's, as I said at the end, he's one of the few folks who can articulate this stuff, and on the stump, when he's speaking, he does it really powerfully. I hope the president will use him because we need to know what's at stake. And that, I think, is what makes this such an important election, is that it's not really an election between Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
Tucker Carlson wrapped it up last night for about a 10-minute opening or something. If people haven't seen that, you got to see it.
I did. I watched it, and it's impressive. It's great to have Tucker out there, I have to say, articulating this stuff as well, because it needs to be articulated so that people who are on the fence or who aren't sure what they think, they can begin to see what's shaping up. In other words, what's really at stake. It's yeah. Not... I mean, if you're voting for Joe Biden in 1992, that's a whole other story. It's a whole other world. Almost 30 years later, he really is going to be the standard bearer for a party that is so in the bag for cultural Marxism.
Yeah.
People need to understand what that means, what's at stake. He makes Clinton look tremendously moderate and conservative, honestly. Yeah. In other words, what we're facing now, it's just really, really dramatic.
I thought Newt, when Newt said systemic anti-Americanism, I thought that was a great phrase right there. That nailed it.
I mean, it is interesting because I think that that's right. In other words, we have to articulate, first of all, what is America? So when somebody says, I hate America or death to America, what do they mean exactly? Right. You know, there are things about America maybe that we don't love, but when we're talking about America, what are we really talking about? And we're talking about what Lincoln called the last best hope of Earth. In other words, apart from God, when we're looking in the natural realm, what is there that is going to compete with the American vision? What other country has founding documents and a founding vision that folks like Martin Luther King Jr. saw as promissory notes? In other words, they were pointing in the right direction. They were promising a future that we still haven't achieved. But we have to look back to the founding. And you've got people today saying, to hell with the founding, to hell with the founders, to hell with Martin Luther King Jr., according to them, even though they don't say it that way because they would get blowback. But that's what they're saying. And they're telling us to go in a radically different direction. It's the direction of the French Revolution. It's an explicitly, in some cases, and implicitly in other cases, atheistic view of humanity, of society. And by the way, I'm glad I thought of this. I'm glad that was before we go to our break here. Last night, Chris Cuomo, I was shocked, Alvin, to see this, but he said on his program on CNN, we need to look to each other and we need to do the right thing. We don't need help from above. He was explicitly saying we don't need God's help. We can do this. And I thought, wow, even to think that would be extraordinary. But to say it on your program, I thought to him about that. I know he said, crazy second hour, folks, don't go away.